Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Let's Eat In on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Kathy Arway. We're here at Roberta's. That was an exciting Super Bowl weekend for New York, right? Go Giants. My guest here today, I don't think he's quite the Super Bowl football fan, but perhaps everyone broke out a little bottle of bubbly when the Knicks, I don't know, teams. Giants.
The Giants.
When the Giants celebrated. Sorry, I suck at sports. Anyway, so my guest today is the venerable wine expert, creator of the Noble Rot, Traveling Wine Saloon, also Wintology, the blog, and now Noble Rot Talks, his own podcast. It's Johnny Cigar.
Hi, good to be here.
Good.
You know, Kathy, yeah. I actually looked into this. The NFL doesn't have anything to do with celebrating with champagne afterwards.
Like, oh,
after football.
Well, I did.
Well, that's good. But if you go online, if you look at baseball, like the locker rooms at baseball, they're all spraying each other with tons of bubbly.
When did that happen?
Since it's been going on. And I decided yesterday, I was writing a post to say, you know, here's my prediction of what the teams are going to open in terms of bubbly. And I went online, I wrote the whole post, and then I went online and I found out they don't do this.
Oh.
They don't even open bubbly.
So that's just baseball.
Yeah, they don't go crazy at all. They get the quarterback
Shows
gets a car.
How much I know about
drives
sports.
Away.
I was like, why aren't they spraying champagne all over there?
I know.
Is that like blasphemy to a wine connoisseur seeing that? Because I cringe when I see people wasting food or.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, yeah, it depends on what you're opening.
Oh, so
I
if
think.
It's not a good wine, which it probably isn't,
yeah,
then it's okay to pour it over
Andre.
Your heads. Okay. All right. So tell me more about kosher wines, because they're kind of booming, and I know you're involved with an event next week that's a festival of kosher wines.
Yeah, this is a fun topic. This is something that I think the wine drinking community, some are aware of and some are not. There is a big rise of impressive kosher wines. I would go so far as to say that the next cult wine that we're going to see might even be a kosher wine. They're really improving production and quality in these
and
wines.
And this festival is happening next week. Where? When?
The Kosher Food and Wine Festival is a week from today here in New York.
Check it out, the New York Kosher Food and Wine. And people are drinking kosher wines even though they don't necessarily subscribe to a kosher diet.
Absolutely. You're seeing this more and more because, like I said, the quality of the production of kosher wines is seeing a renaissance. As people are, I mean, think about this. What makes a good wine?
The fruit. TLC? I don't know.
TLC, yes, absolutely. It's true. It's all about the fruit that you buy. You know, it's like cooking a meal at home. If you have better, fresher ingredients, you're going to have a better meal. So the better the grapes, the better quality the grapes that go into making your wine, the better your wine ultimately is. So you have kosher producers who are actively seeking coveted fruit, you know, expensive fruit that comes from, you know, depending on where we're talking. If we're talking Napa Valley, maybe Cabernet that's growing up in the mountains, you know, where it's better suited. And so, or coveted fruit from the valley.
There's no kosher wineries that are all, you know, have a vineyard too? Or they do?
Some might, actually. Some might own their vineyards. It's very possible. I know there's a small producer in St. Helena, Covenant Wines. This is a good example.
It's called Covenant Wines.
Covenant Wines. And Robert Parker.
I want to make a joke, but I'm not going to.
You can go for it. It's your show.
Okay.
This is your world. I'm just living in it.
Okay. Well, what makes a kosher? What makes a wine kosher? Isn't it all kosher because we don't have dairy with meat?
Yes. No, this is
in
all
wine?
Wine is all wine is kosher.
Oh.
It's all kosher.
So then what the heck?
Depends on who's in the room.
What?
It depends on the process. Depends on the making process.
We're going there.
Yeah.
Okay.
So who's making it?
Like a rabbi?
Yeah. You and I, do you keep kosher?
No.
So if you were in the winery and you touched those grapes, you just declassified
that
wine.
I just ruined it?
You did, totally. Destruction. You just,
whoa, I wonder how many times that's happened.
You owe somebody a lot of money now.
Hmm. What?
Yeah, well.
Okay.
So that's the idea. It kind of comes down to who's in the room.
Who's in the room, yeah. Because certain people who have a certain diet emanate certain bodily...
Sure, whatever you...
Oils,
however you like to...
Okay, but I see what you mean now. It's about the process. It's about who... is involved in the process.
Yeah, and there's a big difference. We were talking about this before we went on, but between Manischewitz or Mevushel wine and kosher wine.
Mevushel wine. It's big, is Manischewitz.
Big difference.
Okay.
Big difference. Mevushel means that the people who keep kosher, who are orthodox, in this country, it depends on where you go. The rules are kind of different all over the place. People in Israel can drink kosher wine. It doesn't necessarily have to be Mevushel. Mevushel means that they boil the wine a little bit. They bring it up to a certain temperature. They don't actually like boil. It's not like they're making a stock.
Yeah. It's but not like they boiling wort into beer, right?
Okay. Exactly. They bring it up to a certain temperature that the regulations that
but
say...
But that changes the taste, and now it tastes like Manischewitz.
Absolutely.
Oh, that's too bad.
So the good news is that there are kosher wines that don't go through that process and are using incredible fruit and are producing brilliant, beautiful wines.
So that's the Renaissance. Is it okay to drink it if I'm not kosher?
I wouldn't recommend it. Yeah,
I'm a little nervous about this festival.
You can drink it, but don't pour it for somebody who is kosher, because then you've just done a bad thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Don't try to rain on anybody's
parade. But what are you going
to
do? So you're pouring? No.
I'm not pouring. No, I'm there to look. I'm there to taste.
So tell me, because you are pouring wine. I'm sorry. I work at a brewery. You're pouring wine and at this event. So the Noble Rot is...
No.
What?
I'm not pouring at the event. I'm just going to be there.
Oh, I know. I'm talking about your Noble Rot event.
Oh, talk about... Yeah,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So your traveling wine club of unique wine-related tastings, social gatherings, with sometimes with a little theatrics involved or food involved. And this one coming up, which is sold out already, unfortunately.
I'm going to point out that we haven't had any wine, by the way.
Oh, sorry. Just water for me. This one coming up, it's a dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
The Noble Rot paired with somebody's supper club
dinner?
Yeah,
this is a big leap of faith for us.
Okay.
For the Noble Rot.
Well, you've been doing stuff like this.
Not a sit-down dinner, though. We've never gone that direction. It's always been standing. We pride ourselves in the idea that the tastings are standing.
Right, that's right.
And they're very social, and they are very social. But we wanted to try something a little different. And a little bit of that comes from the experiences that I had last year, 2011. And, you know,
when we did that dinner and I did a tasting for my book, everyone just really tackled the buffet.
Well, you made some pretty good food. That was part of it, too.
It was supposed to be classy. No, it was classy, though. But so,
nothing but.
Okay, so you learned from this and you decided, why not? Let's do a dinner.
Kind of. I left New York. I was out in California for 5 months last year, taking part in the harvest. And so I was in California. I was in San Francisco and in the Napa Valley area.
Mm-hmm.
If any of your listeners or follow our club, know that about a year ago, I parted ways with my collaborator. And as soon as we sort of parted ways, I left and I went to really dive into the wine industry out there, but also the food, culture. San Francisco's got an incredible culture of food clubs. The supper clubs that exist out there are very different from the clubs that exist here in New York.
Yeah, how so?
In one very specific way, they're kind of businesses. I mean, a lot of the clubs here in New York are
crazy people. Yes.
Folks who work, full-time jobs and need to unleash.
Yes, that's so true.
Right? At the end of the day, we're going to cook 18 courses.
And we're going to lose $200,000 on it.
Exactly. Yeah. No, that's exactly right. We're like, it's a cash crop. It's a cash cow for them, right. I should
say. And we're very sporadic,
Yeah. In San Francisco, a lot of these clubs are run by legit chefs who, not to say that supper clubs here in New York aren't run by legit chefs, okay. but a lot of them are cooks. A lot of them haven't come from kitchens.
Right, right.
So the folks in San Francisco, a lot of them came from kitchens, decided they're going to start something on the side because they're... The scene is, the whole world is, you know, struggling. Everybody's struggling right now. So everybody's trying to be sort of an entrepreneur. But what's ended up happening is a lot of them have created these amazing catering services that also happen to continue to host these very clandestine dining experiences. And San Francisco loves that. There's a great example of a group called the Stag Dining Group.
Oh, yeah.
And they're wonderful. We met them a while ago when a group of us helped out with the Michelin Guide release parties in San Francisco. And they are a great group of five guys who put on classy affairs and really blow their events out of the water.
Or, like, is that a home environment?
No, and that's another big difference.
That's interesting.
No, one of them lives in LA. He's an actor.
Where do they host these things?
All sorts of wonderfully unique, cool places around San Francisco. San Francisco has fabulous venues. It's very welcoming to these dining experiences.
Isn't it illegal, though? Isn't that the whole point of doing the underground supper club, is at a home and then you don't have to license any spot?
Maybe here in New York, you know, where everything is illegal, where we're just constantly living in a world of...
Right, but if you do it at home, then it's kind of just like, oh, legalities. You know, it's a dinner party, sort of.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of these groups have taken it to the next level. So they don't want to be, they don't want to get shut down. They don't want to get in trouble. So they have licenses. They apply for permits and things.
In San Francisco?
Mm-hmm.
They do. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
So there is such a thing as a supper club. It's like what?
Yeah,
really?
I know. A legit.
An overground supper club.
And still fairly clandestine, though. I mean, like, difficult to get into some of these dinners. Difficult to get a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an exclusivity factor.
It's kind of like the same exclusivity as those, you know, really cool bars that don't even have a door that's apparent or a sign on it.
Oh, yeah, I know.
You just have to know about it.
Yeah, I get into all those all the time.
Oh, yeah, I know. Well, I think that's where I met Johnny.
that is
I was cool enough to be there.
Well, you came in with me. So
it's always fun.
That experience, though, getting to meet and know these folks and see how they run their operation, just kind of sat with me. It just kind of, you know,
seems like a good idea.
Put it in the back of my mind. Yeah. Okay. So when I got back out here in November of last year, sort of let the whole experience settle in. I went out to work in a cellar. I went out to work in a tasting room. I helped a brand
in Napa Valley,
in
right?
Napa Valley, yeah. Exactly. I helped a brand new winery establish the voice of their brand online because of all that other stuff that I do.
Did you pick any grapes during the harvest season?
They wouldn't let me touch the
grapes.
They
wouldn't let you touch
them. And it had nothing to do with my being kosher or not kosher. They just took one look at me and they said, "You can probably clean really well."
The harvest time was right after you left, I think.
No. It was happening while I was there. It was a very late harvest this year.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Interesting.
October is when they really started bringing in the red grapes. Late October.
Oh, that must have been exciting, though, to watch and see the full season.
Amazing. Absolutely amazing.
It looks like you're only just expanding and growing this noble rot. You got a talk show, which we'll talk about after our talk show break.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is very disconcerting, actually. You're having a talk show, and we're on this talk show.
Hmm.
It's a podcast.
Who's interviewing who here?
Who is interviewing who? It's getting a little meta. But I know you picked a song, so I thought we'd jump over to that. Mm-hmm. And it's by Sir...
Francis Albert Sinatra.
All right. We'll be right back.
Someone said drink the water, but I will drink the wine. Someone said take a poor man, the rich don't have a dime. Go fool yourselves if you will, I just haven't got the time. Yes, you can drink the water, but I will drink the wine. Someone gave me some small flowers. I held them in my hand. I looked at them for several hours. I didn't understand. Go fool yourselves if you will. You can hold out your hand. I'll give you back your flowers, and I will take the land.
All right, great song choice by Johnny Cigar there. I've never heard that Frank Sinatra song.
No, many people haven't. It's an oldie.
Man.
He recorded it in his later years.
That's really it's something there. All right. Well, today's guest, of course, is Johnny Cigar from The Noble Rot. It is a blog, Wineology, a traveling supper club or wine club or
wine
tasting
saloon.
Events club, you could call it. And it's totally awesome. I highly recommend you check it out. It is also Johnny's birthday today. Just turned 30. Welcome to the club.
Congrats. I prefer to think of it as 120 divided by 4.
And all this before your 30th birthday.
Yeah. I know.
Cool.
I made my first million when I was...
Oh, yeah.
19. When I was 17, it was a very good year. It was...
I knew we were going to get into song and dance at some point here. So also, I wanted to explore the meaning of the Noble Rot, because that's the name of your supper club, wine club. I'm going to say everything.
How much water
today.
Have you had since we've been
I
on the program?
I had so much water today. So the Noble Rot is actually the scientific process. Could you explain a little bit?
Yeah, it's a happening. It's a happening. If anyone has ever... You ever had dessert wine? You ever drink... Dessert
yeah,
wine?
Sure. Yes.
Do you ever have Sauterne from France? Sure.
Yeah. Okay.
Share.
I don't know. What else is another?
How about dessert beer? Let's just stick with something you know.
No, dessert wine.
Okay. So the great
Moscato.
You're close. That's very close.
Yeah. Okay.
Let's stick to Sauterne.
Okay.
In France, where they make the greatest dessert wines on the face of the planet, arguably. So. The typically grapes that go into making these wines are Semillon, maybe Sauvignon Blanc, maybe Chardonnay. And so what they do is they leave these grapes out on the vine long after they were supposed to have been picked. And they hope that those grapes develop a particular rot. Let's call it a noble rot. And a mold. And the Latin is Botrytis cinerea. So if that mold happens and it takes hold of the grape, what happens is it starts to rot the whole cluster. And it sucks out moisture from the center of the grape and turns the inside into this golden nectar, this nectar d'or, this nectar of the gods, this golden deliciousness. And when you press it, this is how you make Sauterne. You make this noble rot wine. And it's a very delicate process. The vineyard crews have to go through the vineyards. They have to make many passes because they have to pick every grape individually, every
right
grape
that
that's developed the rot.
Sweet spot
that's
moment.
Right. That's right. That's right.
So how it's precise.
It's a very noble activity.
Très intéressant.
Whoa. I didn't know you speak Spanish.
mais non. No, but that's really interesting. So it's all about that leaving it on the vine rather than doing something else with it afterwards. And that is a noble rot.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I think it implies...
Why noble?
I think it's got implications. It's sort of a noble
because it's a
cause.
Natural thing. You're not so much doing anything. It's just doing it on its own.
Also, think about this. Those wines age and last for hundreds of years, and they develop beautifully. So you can open a great Sauterne from a brilliant Sauterne house maybe 50, 60, 70 years after it's been bottled, and it might, depending on how it's been stored, sort of blow your mind. Which that's pretty noble that a beverage, right, can do something like that.
Well,
what happens if you open up a beer that's been hanging out for 100 years?
I don't know. I'm not the person to ask about that. I mean, there is actually very similar comparisons to that with beer, as far as I'm concerned. And yeah, some beers are very good for aging. over others, but that's the topic of another
blueberry
episode. Beer? No, you can't.
I'm teasing. I don't mean to diss the beer
aren't they
community.
Great, though?
I love beer. In fact, I drank beer last night.
Oh gosh, we should make like a cross between beer and wine, just to you know, just to check it out. I don't know.
We'll call it a weir.
Bine. Okay.
Bine weir. we better trade that
awesome.
Mark before somebody gets on it.
All right, Johnny. Okay, what is the ultimate? And you know, next week will be Valentine's Day, and I know you have a lovely wife, Amanda, who. She's a brilliant ballerina, but
still with me too. After all that time, we were apart while I was in California. When I came back,
congratulations!
Thank you. I know I'm
impressive.
Lucky.
So you must have a really good answer to this question, which is you know, Valentine's Day, something romantic. What do you think is like the ultimate date meal? It could start, you know, however you want.
Date meal?
Yeah. What this food?
This is a good question. Mm-hmm. I think here's my take on Valentine's Day, right? Because we all know that this is a holiday that is around thank you Hallmark, right?
Yeah.
I think it's a great opportunity for people to say, I'm going to celebrate the things that I love, right? That's sort of the idea when you, I mean, boil it down. So my ideal Valentine's Day meal would be going out and indulging in something maybe you haven't had in a while, but something that you absolutely love, something that when you think of a food, even a wine, and hopefully the two will go together, something that you think of that just makes you pop out of bed in the morning and go, I can't wait to get to the grocery store if you're going to make it, or I can't wait to get to that restaurant to have that particular meal. And it makes you happy, right? Because it makes you happy. It makes you feel good. And I think, you know, while everybody else is out looking for roses and chocolates and all that jazz,
you should dig deep and
remember
some things that they like, but maybe haven't had in a while.
Yeah.
That's
something that
idea.
You love. I'm going to give you an example.
Okay.
At Whole Foods, they make a tiramisu. It is the best tiramisu that I think I have ever had. And what am I going to do on Valentine's Day? I'm going to go and I'm going to buy, they sell them in like the whole size. I'm going to have an entire tiramisu cake to myself because I can, because I'm an adult. I have no mother.
Perfect.
No mother over my shoulder saying, you know, one piece is enough. Two pieces is, you know.
Is that the entire meal?
That might be for me.
Okay.
In fact, what I really would love to do is get brownie batter and whip that up and just eat that whole thing. That is a lifelong dream of mine.
That is something that you got to return to every once in a while, I guess.
Man, yeah.
Okay. All right. So sweets. You got a serious sweet tooth here.
I do. I have a very real chocolate obsession. I can't go many days without having some form of chocolate.
Oh dear.
Dark chocolate.
So what about like a first date meal? What is the ideal meal here?
The ideal first date meal.
Yes.
Here in New York.
Anywhere. In your mind.
Well, it depends, Kathy. Are we talking about vegans? Are we talking about vegetarians? Are we talking about just regular old people who eat burgers? And
what about if it was
I'm just trying to be accommodating
you, somebody you know, what would you like somebody to cater towards you for this email?
Okay. I want the incorporation of the thing that I love. So how about we play around with this obsession with chocolate on Valentine's Day.
You're going to say wine.
I know that's where you want me to go, right?
That's all right.
No.
Okay,
I'm
chocolate.
Resisting.
Okay.
Because I think you can do all sorts of fun things with meal. I was, so how about something that's cocoa crusted, you know, like a powdered fish with cocoa powder or something like that. Cocoa nibs. Use the cocoa nib crusted.
Cocoa
nib crusted. Absolutely. Why not? I mean, a chocolate sauce. Let's do a mole. Mexican. Mm-hmm. That's it.
It's kind of like a Willy Wonka-esque date. Right?
Absolutely.
Nice.
Absolutely. And you need a full-bodied, absolutely
Oompa.
Outrageous,
Loompa.
Dark Oompa Loompa wine. This is what we need. And it has to be, you know, dense and rich and velvety. You put it in your mouth and you just, you need, you take one sip, you need another sip right away. Maybe another sip right after that. Hints of mocha, hints of...
be washed away.
Berry. Oh,
in the chocolate pool.
That's the idea.
Like Augustus Gloop.
But not in a... sort of not in an overwhelming way.
And what is the setting for this ideal date, first date?
How about a wine cave? You know, how about like with being surrounded by barrels? That would be very
and
romantic.
Rot and mold and mustiness.
Absolutely. Wet floors.
Echoes everywhere.
Yeah. People.
Darkness.
People shoveling grapes behind you somewhere.
Yeah. Candlelight.
I think that would
probably
be
a necessity
as a first date. That would impress me.
Sounds like a good, interesting and weird one.
I haven't been on a first date in so long.
I know. That's
you took
why
me
I
off
to
guard. That was impressive.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I don't even know what it's like anymore to go on a first date.
Well, you should consider yourself lucky.
Oh, thank you.
I don't know. That's good. All right, so we'll tell Amanda that she has a lot of interesting experiences to look forward to here with this tiramisu from Whole Foods and a wine cave with creepy stuff.
And chocolate.
Going on, and chocolate. Excellent work, Johnny Cigar.
My pleasure.
So I guess that's about all the time. Oh, wait, what about your podcast about food? I mean, about wine. How can we listen to it?
There's a website now. There's a link on thenoblerot.com. You can go to the blog. You can go to the website all over the place. But Noble Rot Talks.
Noble Rot Talks is your series of interviews and... Mm-hmm. Spotlights on different vintners, or
yeah, exactly, yeah. Winemakers, vintners, people in that industry get a chance to listen in on their lives, experiences, and it's kind of got this American life, a little bit of this American
right.
life feel.
So it differs from this because we're not goofing around so much.
It's very serious,
and it's not a live interview. Basically, it's you putting together this edited episode.
Indeed.
Cool. So indeed. Who we have to look forward to hearing soon?
Well, there are already about 10 up. Okay. So if people haven't heard them, they can go and listen to them. The last one was with a gentleman named Chris Phelps, winemaker, who makes a wine called Ad Vivum, which is a small production. He also makes wine for Swanson Vineyards, which is one of the places that I actually worked when I was out in the valley. And he's a powerhouse winemaker. Guy used to work at Chateau Petrus when he got his start, which is a famous Bordeaux house. And then he was at Camus and Dominus. So really interesting conversation. Great time chat with Jean Hofliger, this French Swiss man who makes wines for Alpha Omega Winery. I'll tell you, boy, just listen to him talk. I was unprepared for the sort of profound things that the man was saying.
Wow.
And then my hero, Robert Foley, winemaker, who makes Robert Foley Vineyards, and he's made wine for a lot of other people.
Whereabouts is that, Robert Foley Vineyards?
He's based up on Howell Mountain, which is in Calistoga. So we're talking an hour and 40 minutes north of San Francisco.
Cool. I wish more of these people were around New York so I can go check them out.
Well, actually, Robert Foley is making wine at the Red Hook Winery with...
Yay! That's like right next door. Okay.
Exactly. With Abe Schoner.
And Christopher.
Yes. Who's the resident in... Yeah, he's a brilliant guy.
Awesome.
And they're getting a new space. They're moving right now to a new space.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. I gotta check out your podcast then. I'll get the whole scoop.
Indeed.
Neato.
Yeah.
So I look forward to your continuing of that series.
Thank you.
They sound like pretty involved and very intense, so.
Yeah, they're intense. I don't joke around. There's no fooling around.
Yeah.
I have to drop everything, totally.
Hey, there's a station for everything. There's a podcast for everything, right?
Agreed.
All right. So we're about to wrap up our little podcast, too. With Johnny Cigar from The Noble Rot. Thank you so much for being on air, and have a great Valentine's Day next weekend.
Thank you for having me, Kathy.
I'd like to thank Jack and everyone at Heritage. See you next week.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.